Welcome to A World of Good podcast. My name is Andrew Gale, and so grateful that you're joining us for this really special episode about things that are happening with the Church of God in Jamaica. We want to share some updates from the Church of God in Jamaica. So first, before we jump into meeting our awesome guests that we have with us, I want to start just by giving a brief history of the Church of God in Jamaica. So the Church of God in Jamaica was born out of a moment of crisis, really, and compassion. In January 1907, a massive earthquake struck Kingston, Jamaica, leaving much of the city in ruins and claiming more than 1,000 lives. Now, just a month after that happened, in April, the Gospel Trumpet, which was a Church of God publication at the time, featured a letter from a Jamaican Christian who described what had happened, the devastation, and appealed for support from people in the United States. And that summer, George and Nellie Olson, along with their newborn baby, answered the call to go and support and care for and be connected to the church in Jamaica. They arrived in Kingston while the city was still in rubble and disrepair. And they reached out to this Christian Jamaican leader. His name was Isaac de Levant, in order to kind of figure out what to do next. And even, I mean, the very next day that they arrived, they actually held an open air service. And from there, from that moment, the Church of God in Jamaica began growing. And actually, even just a year later, they held their first assembly. Now today, the Church of God in Jamaica includes 110 congregations and over 5,000 people that call themselves part of the Church of God. The Church of God in Jamaica was born out of that really difficult, tragic earthquake nearly 120 years ago. And today, we as the Church of God have an opportunity to connect and support the Church of God in Jamaica as they once again walk through a really, really devastating experience. So for those who may not remember, I know we have short attention spans with our current news cycle, but in October of 2025, in the last week of October, Hurricane Melissa made landfall in Jamaica. It was a Category 5 hurricane, the most powerful hurricane that they've actually recorded on the island's history. Over 1,642 Church of God individuals in Jamaica were identified by national leadership as being in need of aid. So many of them were displaced from their homes. One person actually lost their life when a tree fell on a woman on her home during the storm. Out of the 110 Church of God congregations that are there, 55 of them are located in the area that's hardest hit by the storm. And 28 congregations reported direct damage, ranging from roof and structural damages to total loss. Included in all of that devastation, at least 5 pastoral homes sustained major damages. Many of the Church of God families experienced loss of agricultural livelihood, placing them at risk for financial and food insecurity. I mean, the impact beyond the physical destruction also included emotional and spiritual weightiness after congregations and communities are trying to walk with their neighbors through this really difficult experience. Soon after, in November and December of 2025, the Church of God in Jamaica mobilized to support. They have a national leadership team under the leadership of Reverend Courtney Gordon that coordinated local donations, distributed aid. At least 13 Church of God congregations stepped forward to serve as relief distribution centers, enabling churches to care for both Church of God families and their surrounding communities. Church of God Ministries, through the Disaster Relief Fund, we were able to also support the Jamaican Church of God, sending a cash-based assistance, meaning that we sent funds so that they could purchase things locally, supporting local businesses in order to care for their community. So they purchased food packages, hygiene packages, cases of bottled water, tarps for temporary shelter. And through these combined efforts, the emergency response reached over 90% of the identified Church of God households in need. That's incredible. And many of these families actually received aid multiple times as the needs persisted. So a lot has happened in Jamaica since October when we heard about this hurricane. But just recently, we had a couple leaders go and visit, and we want to let them share a little bit about their experience. So in January of 2026 of this year, Gordon Garrett, who is the Disaster Relief Coordinator for the Church of God Ohio Ministries, and Tom Moody, who's the pastor of Local and Global Missions at Salem Church of God, had an opportunity with Gordon's wife, Sandy, to be on the ground with our church in Jamaica. And I just wanted to have them come and share some about what that experience was like, what they're seeing, what they're hearing, and how we as the church in the U.S. and Canada and around the world can be praying for the Church of God in Jamaica. So Tom and Goran, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of A World of Good. So glad you're here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So tell me a little about the trip that you just took. What happened? Where did you go? What did you see?
We saw a lot of beauty in Jamaica, and we connected with a lot of wonderful people, especially in the Church of God in Jamaica. We traveled 3 days of very challenging roads into the interior and into the mountains, and visited 15 churches that were significantly damaged by Hurricane Melissa. Met a lot of people on the way, and were impacted ourselves and just their stories and what they've endured since the end of October, over 3 months ago. So it really made us sad, but it also was very inspiring to hear their stories and to sense their resilient spirit.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, Gordon was actually there significantly longer than I was. I was there for about 3 days. We had a pretty substantial winter storm that hit Ohio, where I'm at. I made it in about a day before that, but poor Gordon, he got stuck there. Flight got canceled. He had to stay in Jamaica until, what, 5 more days, something like that?
Yeah, of all the places to get stuck, though, I mean, it's not the worst.
I could think of far worse, absolutely. But no, I agree with everything that Gordon has articulated thus far. And, you know, one of my purposes on the trip was I have a background in construction and particularly roofing. I've done a lot of work for my time in Florida working with hurricane damage. So getting down there, kind of getting eyes on the projects and things like that from a construction view, taking my ministry hat off and putting my construction worker hat on. But it was really cool to see, you know, just the, like Gordon mentioned, the resilience of the people down there. You know, it was very encouraging. Were times where I felt a little bit overwhelmed. They weren't. They saw that as an opportunity. So it was a cool trip overall. But yes, very very mentally taxing, but it was definitely a worthwhile trip.
You visited. You said 15 churches in 3 days, which sounds like a arduous experience. That's a lot to do in a short period of time. Of those 15 churches, I mean, I've read this that about 28 of our churches were damaged. What did you see? What were your initial impressions of the impact on our churches and the communities?
Definitely, from what I initially witnessed, the damage was catastrophic, to say the least. We get up there in the elevation of the mountains, and the wind speeds are even more fierce than what they are at ground level. And there was a lot of, you know, structural damage to homes, churches. I believe that they had said they identified 1,600 homes and churches within the mountains there connected to them, or, you know, affiliate churches, congregant houses, and things like that, that had substantial damage. Luckily, the majority of which was two roof structures, whether it be the panels lifted off or the entire roof trusses and framing that were completely demolished. Some of them lost, you know, more structural components like the walls and things like that. But yeah, it was overwhelming. Like I mentioned before, I felt bad that I was looking at it through the sense of this is going to be a ton of work. This is more than what, you know, a team is going to be able to go down and take care of in a weekend. But what they saw was an opportunity. You know, they were just so excited about the potential of what could be and what their church could do in the face of that catastrophe.
We saw such a variety of damage. As we drove up the mountains, we saw the landscape, the change of the trees, and this destruction of the crops, which has impacted the family's income significantly on the island. And we saw everything from leaky roofs to church buildings that will have to be totally torn down and rebuilt on the slab. And so there was quite a variety, destruction of roads, destruction of automobiles, businesses, homes. It was so widespread. It was very impactful.
The storm hit October 28th, and, you know, we're recording this podcast here on February 13th. We were there in January, and many of these villages were still completely without power and water. I mean, that's 3 months. There are so many, it's a tourist town. It's very, very high tourism area. So a lot of the resources that were flooded into the area in the wake of the hurricane all went to rehabilitating the hotels and the beaches. So that way they could get the tourism back going. And it almost seems like the people in the villages were just left behind.
Wow.
It was really, really tragic to see just how much was still left to do there. Maybe it's something that we're used to here in the States, where we are blessed to have maybe a little bit better infrastructure or systems in place to take care of people and get the residential areas taken care of. But they're just kind of on their own.
Yeah.
But the roads were wiped out. They drive on the left side of the road in Jamaica, and going up into these mountains, it's pretty scary when you lose half the road and you're kind of hanging off the side of a mountain,
Oh
and
my.
there's traffic coming both directions. Yeah, that was crazy. And lots of foreign utility workers, primarily electrical workers, are on site there, in the villages, trying to get the power back restored. So that it's a years long effort for sure.
I think that's really important because I think this has fallen out of our news cycle, right? We heard, I mean, I remember the reports before the hurricane hit, this is going to be catastrophic. And then we heard a little bits and pieces about it maybe a few weeks after, but it's really fallen out of the conversation in the US news cycle. And yet that doesn't mean that that things have been put back together or that there's been restoration. And I think that's one of the things that is really important and why I think this conversation is so important, just to put this back on people's radar, that even though it's not in our news cycle, does not mean that it's not still a place that is desperately in need of support and help and encouragement. But speaking of, you guys got to interact with a lot of people. And I heard you say, Tom, that you were impressed by kind of the mood or the ways that people, were still able to engage and connect, even in the midst of all of this tragedy. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And maybe even if you have any stories of people that you connected with that would be helpful for us to kind of get a glimpse of what's going on there.
Yeah, I think a lot about a young lady who I don't remember the exact relation, but her mother was a Church of God congregant. She was a member of a church there, and actually passed away in the hurricane. And her sharing the story about how they had found her, and it took days, if not weeks, for them to actually be able to recover her, even though they knew where she was, just because of the scope of the damage. And even while Gordon and I were there, she still had not been buried. They were talking about a cremation because burials were being halted at the time. There wasn't enough infrastructure there to actually have the machines to dig or a place to go dig. And throughout all of it, she didn't cry. She was smiling. And that was the truth about everybody. There was so much hope in the area. I don't think I saw a single tearful person or anyone that looked, deflected. Everyone was just so upbeat and positive. We were greeted by smiling faces everywhere we went. It was just a really profound sense of hope everywhere. And that to me was just incredibly encouraging.
I think the story that I brought home with me and that remains with me is that of Pastor Simone at the Cave Valley Church of God. Pastor Simone also is guidance counselor at the local school. And I interviewed her along with a lot of other folks while I was in Jamaica. And one of the statements that she made was, even in the storm and what has happened, we have been resolute that God is faithful. Now, we were standing outside of the church building that had been totally covered with water from the storm, 15, 16 feet of water.
Oh my.
Their building is totally destroyed. They cannot meet in there. The building is not safe. They're going to have to tear the walls down. She showed us buildings across the street where the water had risen up to the second floor. And it was very moving to go through that building and hear her heart for her people and for the community, and to say that even in the storm and what all that has happened, we are even more resolute that God is faithful. And that was very inspiring and encouraging. And that's the spirit That's the heart that we heard from so many. One of the pastors, Pastor Rudolph Williams from Three Miles River Church of God, I interviewed him. One of his statements was, as a church, we're not here for ourselves. We're here for the community. And we are going to continue to serve our community, whatever it takes. And so that's the spirit, that's the heart that we found over and over in the response of the people as we visited them. And I think also, Andrew, what was striking to me was the encouragement that I sensed just having someone come along beside them to hear their stories, to think that others cared, that they had not been forgotten. And that seemed to bring encouragement to them, which was very humbling because we were not doing anything. It was just an example of ministry of presence, just showing concern and compassion. And so that compels me to want to tell their stories and want to encourage people to come alongside them in every way possible to support them during this difficult time.
That's so good, Goran. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that ministry of presence, I think sometimes we undervalue how powerful that can be when you feel like you are disconnected and alone. That connection can be incredibly valuable. You mentioned the role of the church in supporting the community. And I wonder if you could talk more about that. The churches there, I mean, they were destroyed. 28 of them are dealing with, either a total loss or significant loss to their building. But they also were kind of the hub of support out to those communities, which to me is one of the huge benefits that we have in the Church of God. We talk about other humanitarian agencies that step in these moments, which is great that we need humanitarian agencies doing work. But Michaela Urban, who does our disaster relief, says that one of the benefits that we as the Church of God can offer is that we have people that are in the community before, during, and after a disaster to be to help with mitigation, to be there when disaster strikes, and to continue on serving and caring for a community long after humanitarian relief disappears. So can you talk to me about what does that look like for the church to love and care and support for their community in the midst of this?
Well, it begins with the National Church in Jamaica, with Reverend Courtney Gordon, with Nestle Wright. They were very proactive in sending out people and support. A lot of the churches were able to go out into their community and give care packages. And I think, Tom, we heard that over and over from the local churches that they were out into their community helping, providing care packages, some basic needs. And I think that spoke so highly of the leadership in Jamaica and of the pastors and the heart of the congregations that their focus was not just on self-survival, but it really was to witness to and serve the communities in which God had planted them.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. I think probably one of the more impactful conversations I had during my time there was with Nestle Wright. And as the American church, I think sometimes we have a fixer mentality or a fixer complex to where,
Oh man, oh yeah, all the
yeah,
time.
we have an assumption like it's our responsibility to go make right all the wrongs in the world. And even as I'm sitting there talking with him about, oh yeah, we could, this would be like phase one, getting the churches, rounded up, then we can move on to the structures. And he stopped me and said, well, no, like we would definitely really appreciate some help getting our churches put together. But our vision and our strategy is once our churches are built and made whole, we're going to use these as outposts. And we want to use that as a place where our members can meet and then mobilize, disperse out into the community and love their neighbors. Be the hands and feet of Jesus to the people where it's going to be most impactful for them. It was almost like he was saying in a very kind way of like, please don't rob this blessing from us. Like it is a blessing for them to be able to have this catastrophe as a means of showing Christ's love to their neighbors. And it's like, oh, you are so right about that. So it's cool how this partnership can unfold where, yeah, we can still get involved, we can go be a help, but it's more of building the church so that they can go be the church.
I love that. I think that is so such a great reminder. And right after you saying we shouldn't be fixers, my question is going to be, how can we come alongside and get involved? Which I know feels like we're trying to fix it, but maybe involvement isn't just engaging. There's, I think, lots of different ways people can be involved. So if somebody is listening to this and they say, I had no idea this was still going on. I thought this was over. And now they're hearing, no, we have 28 churches, you know, that are still experiencing challenges. What would it look like for them to be involved in that in some way? What would be some of your ways that they can connect?
I think the call and the response, Andrew, as you folks have put out to us, pray, give, and go. And I think that's a good outline, good path for us to follow. In my interviews with the different folks in Jamaica, I would often say, how can we pray for you? So, first of all, we can support them in our prayers. And I remember one request saying, please pray for our physical and spiritual strength. It is very hard, it is very difficult to maneuver during through some of what we're dealing with. I think also to pray not only for the resources, but the unity in the church. When difficulties, disasters come, it's either an opportunity for unity or disagreement. And we sense great unity, but we need to pray for that. I think to give tools and materials are very expensive in Jamaica, especially now in the aftermath of the hurricane. Everybody's needing materials, everybody's needing tools. And so your gifts will go a long way in helping the church move forward and repair some of their buildings and then go. Our goal, together with you and Michaela, is to send 10 teams of 10 people in the next 6 months to help some of the churches repair their buildings. So we would love to talk with folks to help make that happen and just let us know how we can make that happen with you.
Yeah, and as it pertains to the go part of it specifically, I think a lot of people would probably look at the type of work there and think that they are unqualified or that's a work for someone else. And I would challenge that a little bit. I would love for people to start thinking outside the box a little bit more and say, you know, how has God uniquely gifted and wired me? Like, what skill sets do I have? What giftings, what passions, what burdens do I have that could be of use here? I mean, if you're someone who is, you know, a really talented cook, then there are going to be opportunities with the work teams to make meals and do things like that. If you're good with kids, several of these churches had schools attached to them, and school is ongoing whether there's a roof or not. So there's opportunities there to kind of love on the kids in the community and in the villages. Getting people out of their headspace. If you're a mental health professional and you want to serve in some way, it was a really traumatic experience what they just went through. And I'm sure there's plenty of people there who would say, yeah, I'd love to talk to somebody about my experience or my loss and kind of process through some of that grief. So regardless of what your gifting, your skill set is, I do believe that there is a real need for you on these work teams. So please don't count yourself out. If you had any questions about that, I mean, anyone from the team is willing to kind of talk with you about that and how what that might look like exactly. But then also looking at some of the quotes they're receiving for the reconstruction of these buildings, some are significantly higher, but I would say on average, they're looking at about $30,000 per church to get things done. And maybe 50 to 60% of that is labor. So we can already, even if you aren't physically giving money, by going on these trips, you are, in a sense, giving you know, $15,000 back to the church in your labor. You know, you're helping to save them a ton of money in that, where we just have to worry about materials and things of that nature. So it, going on these trips is going to serve a ton of good.
I love that. Those are so helpful, so practical. And it's really something for anyone. Anyone can be involved in whether it's praying for the church, whether it's giving to the reconstruction efforts, or whether it's going and supporting. There's lots of different ways that people can get involved. Thank you guys so much for sharing your stories, for what's going on, for giving of your time and your energy and your effort to go and be down there with the church. As the Church of God, we're so grateful that we had folks that could go and be on the ground, loving and caring for that community there. If people need more information, you can contact us at disasterrelief@chog.org. And we're helping to kind of coordinate some of these things, and we'll get that information out to the people that need it. If you want to be a part of these teams, or if you want to give, all that information you can find on our website or by contacting us at disasterrelief@chog.org. Tom, Gordon, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for all that you've done. And we'll be praying for the Church of God in Jamaica.
Thank you so much for having us again. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you for the opportunity, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/aworldofgood. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.